Like I said, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Dan. And what we got up here tonight is seven guys from the Dog on the Roof group in Fullerton, California. Our group's birthday is tomorrow. It's going to be 45 years old. And all the guys sitting up here are over 20 years sober. We all sobered up together. And as far as I know, that's the oldest meeting in Orange County. I'm pretty sure about that. And so what we're going to do tonight is we're going to share basically how we grew up together in AA. Okay? So we're going to pick on some guys. I'm going to pick on some guys to start it off, and then we're going to go down, and they're going to hand it off and do whatever. So we're going to have a lot of fun tonight. So I'm going to start off with Rick here.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Rick. I've been sober since May 15th, 1986, and for that I'm grateful. I'd like to thank the committee for asking us to participate. It's an honor and a privilege to share in Alcoholics Anonymous. A little bit about, it's kind of unique, these guys up here tonight. You kind of heard that we all kind of grew up together. I'm probably the baby in the group as far as age-wise goes. And I got sober on May 15th, 1986, and I grew up in Long Beach, California. I'm glad to see Lulu stayed here because I know how she feels. You know, I was there was three white people in my school, and we're all on eight-hour shifts, so I know how you feel. But anyway, growing up in that neighborhood, I learned how to run and fight. So fight before you run. Run before you fight. So, but when I got sober, these guys came down there and picked me up from Long Beach and drove me all the way to Orange County, California, where I met a lot of these guys. And I've been sober once before, and I went into the meetings, and somebody talked about it earlier today about coming into the meetings where you kind of felt like there was a bunch of people sitting around, old people sitting around telling stories about their grandkids and complaining and whatnot. But when I got to this group of guys, these guys were alive, and they were living. And there were some guys in that group that were older members of Alcoholics Anonymous. To us, when we were new, 35 was old, all right? So when somebody... You never trust anybody over 30, so when we got sober, these guys kind of took us in. And nobody said, hey, you're too young to be sober, or you're too young to be an alcoholic, you didn't drink enough, I spilt more than you drank, all that stuff. They never said any of that. They welcomed us in and said, if you guys want to stay sober and live a better life, you're more than welcome to come here. And I got a lot of that. I didn't get a lot of that when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, but when I came to this group, I was willing to hear that, and I heard it, and these guys took us in. And what they did is we basically grew up together. You see these guys sitting up here. There was a lot of guys in our group around 83 to 86 that were very young. And there was very few older members in our group. So there was a lot, probably 60% of the guys in our group were under 30 years old at that time. So what you're looking at up here, there was probably 30 to 40 young people in our group about the same time that we got sober. So what's odd about this situation is there is, relatively speaking, it's a larger number of people, statistically, that have stayed sober over 20 years. So that is what's odd about it. Now, what's odd, another thing is about us is all of us are very different people. We're all very, very different. Okay? When we all got sober, none of us that you see up here hung out together. Okay? We all had our own friends and all had our own things that we did. We're motivated by very different things, very different, just very different people. And so we had our own friends, and we went around, and we were all together, don't get me wrong, but what you see here is a lot of the guys, especially myself and, you know, these guys here, the guys that we ran with ended up leaving and drinking, getting loaded. So what you see here is what's left, okay? And it's not like we run around hugging each other all the time, you know, it's just that we're what's left. But what's special about that is even though we are very different people and very different-minded, we have one thing in common, which is we all want to be sober more than anything else. We all love our home group more than anything else. And that's one common bond that's always kept us together. You know, and we essentially grew up together. So when I came from Long Beach and I moved out here, these guys took us in. Matter of fact, Chris and I were pretty new together. And we were both homeless, essentially. And these guys let us stay at their house or their apartments on the weekends. So I drove all the way from Long Beach. Either Dan or Paul would come get me. Reuben lived out there in Long Beach, and they would drive me all the way out to Long Beach, and we get to stay on these guys' couches, you know. And let me tell you a little something about living with a bunch of guys that are, you know, 18 to 22 years old. And we all paid, I think rent was $700 a month, so between all of us was $175 a month. We pretty much were broke. We didn't have anything. So one guy would buy macaroni and cheese, one guy would buy tuna, one guy would buy milk, one guy would buy cereal, and we all pretty much put our stuff together and we survived together. We ate together, we broke bread together, you know, and my MO was, when I got sober, is I grew up in an area where if you left your shit unattended, it's mine, you know. So when I got there, they left their food out, you know. Hey man, I'm hungry, you know, that's my food. And when I got home, one time and I was very offended. Because they put locks on the doors, you know, they put padlocks on there, and they're all talking around out, because we used to stand out in front of the meetings after the meetings and talk, and they would say, man, there's a thief in our house. And I was like, yeah, there's a thief in our house. No good son of a bitch. Where is he? And I knew who it was. It was humiliating. But you know what? Those guys said, you know what? That's how we do it. It's like, look, dude, it's unacceptable to live like this. So what I had to do, as my sponsor said, hey, you got to make amends for that. So what I had to do is I had to calculate how much I stole from these guys. And I went out and I shopped and I got $150 worth of shampoo, hair lotion. I take it all you guys got that one. A lot of macaroni and cheese. And whatnot, and pay it back, and give it back, and I had to stop stealing. I'm glad I didn't ask those guys what they wanted me to do to make amends, because they wanted me to feed them for the next 6 years, is what they would have wanted to do. So, anyway, I ended up, we moved out of that apartment, a bunch of us got a house together, and I think it was Reuben and I and Rob lived together, and let me paint a little picture for you, man. These houses were like, disgusting, because we were all, that's a short word for it, that was a nice word for it, actually. There was a lot of us that worked in aerospace at the time. We had about an average income of $35,000 to $40,000 a year each. So we had a combined income on one of these houses of like $250,000. And we didn't have a picture on the wall. We didn't have a vacuum cleaner. We didn't have anything other than a TV set. And we all still ate macaroni and cheese, you know. So we're broke. You know, don't ask me what we did with our money, but we did something with it. But I would come home, and we were just slobs, man. And there's a point with Rob here ended up getting divorced from one of his wives and one of his wives, sorry. I mean to throw you in the box. But he was like the only, I mean, there's a 7 to 10 year difference. Rob's either 7 to 10 years older than all of us. So what Keith did is he said, hey, you know what? I can't stand going to that house over there. You're gonna have to go live with these guys and show them how to live. You know, and we went over there, and he's like, this is completely unacceptable. And looking back on it, it really was. But I remember thinking, who the hell does this guy think he is? You know, come in here and tell us that we're messed up. So he made a chore chart, and we come home, and we had Tuesday night where we would have to clean up. And he had us in there with toothbrushes and stuff in the cracks in the bathtub and cleaning it, and he would inspect it. And, you know, clean our rooms. We'd make sure our rooms were made and stuff like that. And I remember one time, he'd take the toaster out. I know I'm stealing Reuben's story, but we'd take the toaster out and, he would say, this is the toaster. This is for toast. Yeah, I figured that out. And he'd say, you put the toast in there and you toast it. When you're done, you take the little tray out of the bottom. You take the crumbs out of the tray and you clean it. You wash it in the sink. You put it back. You put the toaster back. And then he'd take you in the bathroom and he'd say, here's three guys live here. There's three bars of soap. There's three things of hair gel. I expect to see a fourth tomorrow, you know, and he made us responsible. And what happened was is we conformed and we grew up. And you can go in that house after a certain amount of time and see that we actually what happened was is he said, this is not how sober people live. This is not living sober. And he was probably the only adult amongst us all at that point enough to see that. And so what happened was, is a lot of us ended up coming up because of that. And we went out to these other houses and helped these guys come up. And to this day, there's group houses that there are standards in those houses because of the mistakes all of us up here made. All the stupid things that we did, now the newcomers have to pay for when they get to the houses. Okay? We have rules because we broke them all. And for that, I'm forever grateful. And there is... As we stayed sober and a lot of people around us left, and like I said, we're the only ones left, you start to get a bond between you. You start to get a bond between the guys that are left, just because the fact that, why are you here? Why are we here? We're here to stay sober, and that's it, and get a better life. And all of us have a unique quality about us, and there's something about each one of these guys that has helped me in my sobriety and helped me grow up in my sobriety. And a lot of times I did not like it, okay? A lot of times I did not like the fact that there's things about these guys that made me grow up, okay? And a lot of people leave because of that, you know? But each of them do have a unique quality. Like I said, Rob was kind of like the adult with all of us, so he's kind of level-headed one. And Paul's always been the intellectual and smart guy, you know? If there's a smart guy in our group, it's Paul. So, and if any mathematical questions, we went to Paul. And Dan was always had the ability to keep it light and laugh it up and have a good time, seemed to never have a problem with that. And Eric Beeler was just, he could make you laugh about, I mean, you could be dying and he could make you laugh, you know, and you can have a lot of problems and Eric can make you laugh. And that, I tell you what, that's golden, especially when your ass is in your hands, you know. And Chris Campbell, I've always admired his ability to not be afraid to go do things and be inventive and be out there, because I'm the kind of guy that goes, hey, man, you know what, give me a job that I can go to. I know I'm going to get 40 hours pay, 40 hours work, and I'm happy. I've never been that kind of guy that could be that free or whatever. So that's very inspiring. And Ruben's always been kind of the mother of all of us, and kind of kept us all together. Now Ricky, you know. And me, I haven't figured out what the fuck I'm good at yet. So if there's a bad example in the group, it's me. So what does Keith say? There's sometimes the best thing you can be is the worst example. Anyway, I'm just glad to be here, glad to be sober. I'm glad to see my friend Chuck over here, my first and last successful 12-step call. So I figured I'd just do it right the first time and you don't have to do it ever again. Thanks. Ruben, you want to share?
You're an irritant. And he does it well. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ruben. Most important thing I can share with you is I've been clean and sober since April the 2nd, 1985. For that, I'm grateful. And it's good to be here sober and a privilege to be on this panel. And, you know, when I got sober, it was like the beginning of that movie Saving Private Ryan when they first land on the beach and that door drops and the machine guns are going and they're just dropping and falling. And them guys are afraid to get off the beach and they're stuck there and the mortar shells are going off. And that's the way I felt. I knew just a matter of time before I was the one that was going to go down next, you know. And these guys are my brothers in arms, the ones that hooked up. And, you know, like Rick said, it wasn't like by choice. You know, they weren't my best friends. They weren't the guys I was looking for. It was just who was there. And we had a common problem and a common solution. And our common solution was our sponsors and the old timers. It wasn't each other. You know, we weren't sitting around like some newcomers do when they're sitting around and just kind of running all their stuff out on each other, trying to figure it out. We were ratting each other off to our sponsors. You know what he said, and you know what he said. And I remember going to a meeting one time. We're going down the road, I was a punker. I had nose rings, and the sides of my head was shaved. My hair was dyed maroon. I was like 120 pounds. And we're going down the road, and we got a stoner and a surfer and a jock in the car, and me, and like a carload of girls would come by us, and we all duck. We didn't want to be seen with each other. And we were like embarrassed to be seen with each other, but we were going to the answer. And I was 16 when I got sober, and I ended up living with my folks for a little while, and then my character defects didn't change when I was new necessarily, and I was living in an environment where I could use them actively, and I knew if something didn't change, I was going to get loaded. And I asked for help, but I was broke. I sold my soul for a Yugo, and the people that I sold my soul to got the short end of the deal because I didn't have much of a soul at the time. And Rob helped me out. He had an apartment and said I could come live on the couch for $50 a month. And mind you, the day before, I just got in a fight with my parents because I wouldn't put the towels in the hamper. And when I was done with them, I'd throw them on the ground. And it was like a two-hour fight. And I went over to Rob, and this guy said he was going to help me out. And I could stay there for $50 a month because that's all I could afford. and went through the whole tour. And like Rick was saying, there was the toaster, and you got to put the toaster away. He yelled at me for leaving the crumbs in the toaster. And he went to the bathroom, and he turned the faucet on, and he splashed the water. This is what happens when you're like washing your face, and you're shaving, and water's going to splash on the mirror and all over the counter. And then he opens up the drawer, and there's a towel there. He goes, this towel is for wiping the counter off and doing the mirror, you know. And I was like, I was biting my tongue. I just like, I wanted to like scream and yell, but I knew if I did, I wouldn't have a place to live. And he taught me some things, you know, how to be clean a little bit. And so I lived with him for like 30 days, and then I moved in with, it wasn't that long. And I moved in with Rick and Dan, or Rick and Eric and Dan over here. And there was a few of us. There was five of us in a three-bedroom apartment, two-bedroom apartment, five of us in two-bedroom apartment, one bathroom, no refrigerator. And there wasn't a lot of privacy. I mean, there would be guys shaving or brushing his teeth. One would be sitting on the stool, and you'd have to crawl over the guy sitting on the stool to take a shower. You know, you just hang a towel, kind of get a little bit of semi-privacy. We discovered all our shortcomings living together and stealing food from each other, borrowing money, you know. And the end of the week, everybody's paying each other back and you know, digging through the couches and getting everybody else's change. And it was fun. And Dan was intense. He was always pacing and screaming and yelling and throwing a big book around. And we were like, dude, calm down, man. What's the problem? We'd gang up on him and gang up on Eric. I had to do a lot of writing at the time with my sponsor because I had these resentments against these guys because all the crude, rude, disgusting stuff they were doing, and they were like insensitive and didn't care about anybody else and just totally selfish and just out for themselves never thought of anybody else, and they were just takers and blah, blah, blah. And I do all this writing. I take it to my sponsor, and he says, you know what really, really pisses you off about that guy? He says, just like you. You're living in a house full of mirrors. And I was like, no way. I was offended, you know. And I was trying to rule the roost from the couch. I was like trying to pull group consciousness on these guys, and I was living on the couch. I remember when Rob moved back in, we ended up getting that house. We stayed sober a few years, and we started getting good jobs. And like Rick said, we had that house, and we were making pretty good income. We were spending on toys. We were riding motorcycles and shooting guns in the house on a few occasions. Guns going off and just crazy, insane stuff. And I acquired a pet rat during that process of that time. And he lived with me. He literally lived with me. He didn't live in a cage. He slept with me at night. He'd crawl up underneath my neck right here. And he'd run around. He was a free-range rat. Well-trained, very lovable. And the first thing Rob did when he moved in, he was bitter coming out of divorce, you know, and he was just taking it out on us. There's a new sheriff in town, and he wrote the rules. But my sponsor made it very clear that if you argue with Rob, you have to find a new place to live. And it was like one of those things again, okay, I got to keep my mouth shut, not because I like this guy, because I need a place to live. And this is where I want to be. And the first thing he told me was, a rat is not a domestic pet. It needs to go. And it was like, I was angry, and it came down to, it's either the rat or it's you. The rat had to go. But we slowly, you know, have grown up here, and we support each other today. And, you know, I don't always love all these guys. It hasn't been a love fest from the beginning, but we have had to stay here and work the steps and the traditions on each other. And today we love each other in a special way because we survived. And we know our strengths and we know our weaknesses. And it's like Paul over there. There are times when I get off on a tangent or I get into personalities, and Paul has the most calming effect on me of anybody, that he can just pull me right back into the answer because he doesn't get into personalities. You know, he's a very principled guy, and he's sober less than I am. But I've learned to rely on these guys for their strengths, you know, to make up for my weaknesses. And we support each other. We complement each other like that. And like Dan, me and him have kids that are 3 weeks apart, and we have a lot of identity and stuff like that. And we've supported each other a lot of times when we've been in bad places with them kids, you know. I remember a few years ago, I was reading my books before my son came to live with me. He was having a really bad panic attack, and it really freaked me out. I didn't know what to do. And Chris got in the car with me and supported me and took me to take my kid back home to his mom, you know. And they're just on down days, we've been there with each other. We don't kick each other when we're down. We just kind of hook each other on their arm. Let's go. There was one day I was just down about something, and it was just like one of those days where the weight of the world's coming and tidal wave's coming. And Dan walked up to me, and he looked me in the eye, and he said, F it. You know, he said, screw it. And that little sentence there, when he said, screw it, meant the world to me, because all it said in that two words was, I know what you're going through. Let's go. Let's get into the answer. You know? And like, hook up, let's go. We don't let each other fall down. And wow, I am everything I am today is because of these guys in my home group. You know, like I said. And Eric's always been a challenge for me. When I was new, I could share about my problems, and it would like the room would go quiet. And people would, like, want to commit suicide. You know what I mean? You could see, like, wanting to pull the nooses out. And it was, like, my stuff was just depressing. And it just dragged the meeting down. It was like I was a dead weight sharing my stuff. And he could share the exact same thing. And everybody would be laughing and just having a great time about it. And it used to piss me off. It's like, it's the same thing, you know? And but he has that gift, you know, and you'll get to hear that. He has that gift of just making people laugh, you know. And like I said, there's a reason every one of us is here sober today. And I just pray to God that we can continue to go on this road. And I was looking at the new guys today back there. There's a whole group of new guys here with us. And I'm hoping that maybe one day, 20 years from now, they can stand up here and do the same thing. You know, they have the same opportunity that we have. That's it. Thank you.
Alcoholic. My name is Eric. Sober since January 14th, 1986. And I wrote a poem for tonight, but I don't have it. So anyway, all right. I'm just this is pretty good so far. And I want to thank the committee and our sponsor and the guys up here. And you got to, everyone's talking about Rob, but there's more background that needs to be out. So, before the Cinnamon Tree apartment, there was the Wilshire apartment, which was our first apartment, and Dan lived there. And I was new. I got out of a detox, I went to Mommy's house, and somehow Mom wasn't really impressed with my new sobriety, so she threw my ass out and was throwing my clothes just like if I was drunk. So I stole my dad's Honda Civic and packed all my stuff in the back, and there was a lot of room left. And went to the meeting, and I tried to share my best. I was really, I realized how much I loved my mom and my sister, and how wrong I am now. And the next guy got up after me. It was a lot of old-timers in that meeting, Sunday night Compton meeting in Bellflower. And next guy got up, Eggman Jim, and said, any asshole can say that. And I was like, oh, rat farts. You know, and I'm there. And Keith grabbed me after the meeting and said, hey, this guy can help you out. And so this biker dude was getting married to his old lady, and he let me stay at his apartment for 2 weeks. And then I got to move in the Wilshire apartment. And that was the Wilshire apartment was like I got to live on the couch. There were guys in every room. There were like three rooms. And this guy, Kimball, lived in the living room. And he lived behind the couch. So I get to sleep on the couch. I'm like, don't you want the couch? He's like, no, I sleep back here. I'm like, oh, okay. And well, then stay on your side of the couch. Yeah, I don't know what's going on back there. And he had his blankie, and like, okay, whatever. And the kitchen in the Wilshire apartment just ended up, we lost control of it. We couldn't save it. And there was stuff in the dishes and the trash can and the refrigerator that was moving. And there's some of those little bugs in here. There was a lot of those, just like a fog. Like, am I a flashback? No, those are bugs, you know? And so we just kind of quarantined that off and left that. And and the guys that smoke in the shower. and there was one of those little shower windows. So there was all these wet yellow cigarette butts up there. Why clean them? There's going to be another one in a minute, you know. And then, or the makeshift ashtrays, like someone like you know, there's like half a Pepsi can with 300 cigarette butts in it. And, oh, that's full. Here's a cake plate. Yeah, that. Oh, that's full too. Here's a coffee cup. Hey, that was my coffee cup. You know, and how am I supposed to go to work now? You know, and you know, it was just weird. Kimball's blanket was brown, and then he washed it, and it was yellow. I don't know. So when Rob got the assignment to clean up the houses, it was a job. And but Dan lived there, and different guys. And you know, I got sober and went with the only group that said, "Come go with us. You're welcome." And these guys took me in and helped me, and you know, and have throughout my sobriety have helped me. And I've had my sponsors had to tell me, you know, different things besides just about staying sober. Like, you know, you need a lawyer, you know. For this problem, you need a lawyer. Like, I know, I've been trying to save my money. I didn't want to tell anybody. It's embarrassing. He said, no, go home, pay all your home bills, and then call a lawyer and see what you can do. And then I started getting phone calls from these guys. And they were at different times. Not like all the phone calls you get, like, oh, you broke your leg? I just wanted to call so you knew I called. You know, it was, you know, some guys would call in the morning, some guys would call the next day, and some guy, you know, and it was like they were genuinely supporting my sobriety and concern, you know. And I had, you know, I don't know, when I was new, I had weird stuff. And, you know, and I did my fourth and fifth step, and I couldn't call my dog for 30 days after that. And, you know, just different stuff. And they weren't, like, offended. They were like, oh, okay. And so that's, never mind. Anyway, so, and, you know, and I just, I was like, okay, I can stay here. And, you know, and it was good. And living with Dan and Reuben in that apartment, Reuben moved in from his mom's place. And Reuben used to describe his mom when he was newer. Reuben has 9 months on me. So Reuben, I would listen to Reuben. I'm like, man, that guy's got it. That guy's good. And then we get into the group, and Reuben would start talking, and his old sponsor would be standing there and turn around and say, "Shut up, Reuben. Nobody's talking to you." You know, I was like, oh. I'm like, oh, dude, they did that to Reuben. What are they going to do to me? You know, because I was, that guy had some program. I was like, man. And but Reuben moved into Cinnamon Tree, and there were, like you said, five of us in there. This guy, Alpino, I woke up one morning, and I hear this thong, 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 thong. And I'm like, man, what's that? And it was the weekend, and some guys would stay over on the weekend. And I come, just like Saturday morning, I come shuffling in the living room, and this big Italian guy named Al, who's sitting on top of this other guy named Ian, who irritated everybody, you know, and made Rick seem fun, you know, and Al's got Ian by the ears, and he's banging his head on the floor in the kitchen. And I'm like, I need to get to the milk, you know, and I was just like, like, excuse me. You know, like, oh, Al's beating at me, and I need some milk. And I watched Al go for the milk one time, and Al's got a towel on, nothing else. And he gets up, and he goes to the refrigerator, and he's like, mmm, he doesn't buy anything except for pizzas, you know. And he just buys anything that costs at least $20. Like, let's get some pizzas, not a pizza. I'm like, right on, Al. And Al goes and gets one milk. He goes, sniffs it, puts it back, and he gets another one. He sniffs it, puts it back, and me, it was somebody. Were you there? We were watching them, dude. We're like, watch this, and he sniffs another one. So he picked the least rotten one, and he's all, we're like, and buy some milk, you bastard, you know. And anyway, you know, and but we survived the houses, and we learned how to be civil, and. You know, and go to work, like, more than once a week, and, you know, different things. And, you know, and I got a lot of support from all these guys and a sponsor. And none of us were, whatever. This isn't the, you know, I kind of picture God going, you know, like, different. Some, we got a new guy. He can't be here right now. He's in the room. But his name's Leon. And he said God, like, infiltrated his life and started helping him without his consent, you know. And because I kind of picture God sometimes just going, look at him, and in the whatever, God's right hand guy or angel or whatever's going, I don't know about that one. God's like, yeah, that's a good one, you know. And we turn that one, we'll be, you know, and I figure we're about 30 million to one. This seven up here, you know, and I'm like, everybody's got different qualities, like the guy said, different personalities and different defects. And I'm glad we're not the seven deadly sins, you know, we're the seven alive assets today. And you know what I mean? And, we're fortunate, and I'm grateful to be a part of this. And I want to thank you guys for letting us share. And I'd like to turn over to Chris. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Chris. And the most important thing I can share is my sobriety date is October 26, 1986, and I'm grateful for that. And I was taught to give my sobriety date first and the dog on the roof. And I'm grateful. I'm the newcomer here at the table with 20 years. And I leaned over to Eric and said, man, you've always made me laugh from like day one. And Eric just looked at me and said, but I was always serious, you know. And I've enjoyed this panel. And, you know, simply put, what I love about the table here, we did this thing for a while. There was, you know, we were going to this other meeting for a while that had these classes, class 85, class 8. Well, there's four guys here that sobered up in 86. And one of the tricks has been we've never posed for a specialized picture together, because whenever you get those pictures, somebody leaves AA. And I was just thinking about Rick, Paul, myself, and Eric. We do activities and campouts, and somebody will come around with a camera, and instantly, you know, somebody just bolts. We just leave, and it's been kind of like a superstition thing that I guess if you've been rubbing elbow to elbow for 20-plus years with the same guys, you kind of get your own little quirks going. And I'll tell you what's cool is I came here, I'm a retread, loser, alcoholic, and there's one guy in here who's seen me from the very first time I came to AA, that was Keith, and I first heard Keith in a meeting when Keith, I think, was like 8 years sober, and I was at the Dog on the Roof, at the original Dog on the Roof house. I don't know if anybody's a baseball follower, but they have Tiger Stadium has a seat that has a pillar right there, and I was at the Dog on the Roof, and the only chair available was one where there was a post right in front of you. So you could hear everything, but you couldn't see anybody out there in the meeting. And I heard Keith share. And you know, there weren't a lot of young people in AA. That was 1982, 83. I was 16 years old. Keith shared some stuff that I won't, you know, just share. It was in that men's stag, and, you know, we leave it there. But, you know, Keith was probably 40 or so, and, you know, I was a 16-year-old criminal. And there's just some things he shared about alcoholism and his disease that really perked me up, and I heard. And, you know, I didn't think about my age much, and I went to AA for a bit, got my own good ideas, and I left AA. And you know what? Keith didn't chase me down. Nobody chased me down. I said, you know, we'll be doing AA. And about 3 years later, my ass come crawling back. You know, I had to pick up a phone and make a phone call, Keith has the recording somewhere, but I asked him for help, and he sent some people and did a 12-step call, and they brought me along. And immediately, Eric was one of my first contacts when I came to the group. He was riding with my sponsor, my soon-to-be sponsor again, and I remember Eric was as intense. He was 9 months sober, 10 months sober, and just like on me and talking and all that. And I knew immediately because I asked him. He just blurted all this stuff out, and I said, do you got a smoke? And he gave me a cigarette, and he just gave me more cigarettes, and we've been friends ever since. Yeah. And with the houses and all that, these guys took me to a detox. I detoxed there for 10 days. You know, Keith had some insight on me, and from what I heard, these guys here, my peers, that with all the other people that have come and gone, I've always seemed to have seen these guys that are sitting here. Well, amazing thing to me, you know, but I always remembered them, and because the group's always been 50 people, 50 guys in it, and it's the same now, but these are the guys. And Keith said, well, we don't trust you, You know, you just got here, but you don't have a place to stay, so you can stay on this couch. You have to leave, get a job. You got to leave by the time the last guy leaves, and you can't come back until after a meeting. And that was the apartments. And I lived with Dan, Eric, and Al, a couple other guys that aren't here. We're living there, and they said, they gave me the same thing. We don't trust you. We don't know you, but we have a little history on you, and you can stay here. And I got a job, and they stayed true to that word. And then they put me to the test. They said, you got to go live in a place. And I lived in a recovery house. These guys had some apartments that they were talking about, but I had to go live in a recovery house for a period of time. And then I guess Keith just said, go get them. And I was sinking. And they brought me in, and I lived in the apartments. I moved in with Paul. And they put me on a couch. There was a Cinnamon Tree Apartments. There were three apartments there. And Paul and a guy named Tom and a guy who was leaving named Tad lived there. And they said, stay on the couch. Tad is resigning from AA, but he's exercising his right to stay in the apartment. And so every day, you know, my job was kind of like, when are you leaving? As he'd walk by. And eventually he left. I moved in. And these guys said, okay, pay rent. You're working at a job. And in our first apartment that I remember is, I'll simply put it this way, okay? The kitchen was just throw the dishes away after 3-4 months. There was one room that had a hole in the ceiling, and there were mushrooms growing reverse down from the top. And we were 21. We were just trying to stay sober. And, you know, I mean, that was the main thing. It was like going to AA meetings constantly. And, you know, Paul and myself, we had hair back then. And you know, we're just crazy, and we drink 60 ounces of coffee a day, and we're running with big boys. You know, we're all 21, whatever. And Keith and these guys, there were a lot of big, just biker dudes, and Keith, you know, the older pace setter, and we'd just run hard, man. We would run hard every day, and just from the beginning, I was always taught, you know, get your ass up. I don't care what it takes. Get to work. Put in a day's work and get your ass to the meeting, period. And then you can go rest. And I did that every day. And from the beginning, it was just like I was in a car with these guys all the time. And I lived in the different houses with the guys. I think I've lived with just about everybody here. I didn't live with Rick, but me and Rick have, you know, we've shared the same roof a few nights. And actually, I picked up Rick one day. Rick's big, tough 16-year-old from Long Beach. He was 17 or 18. And I went and I was screwing off one day, and I had a car, nine months sober, and I went over to his house. He was staying with his mom in Long Beach, and it was during the day. And I'm a punk rocker from the streets. You know, I've been shot at and missed, and I've been in some bad scrapes and all that. And we just decided to do nothing. So we watched a movie, and it was The Hitcher, and we were both scared. And we're like, oh, hold me. And it's like a couple of little girls. And we still laugh about that. I mean, it was funny. And but we went to an AA meeting that night. And, you know, with the guys, you know, I've just grown up with these guys. And, I mean, it just blows me away that, you know, I can have all kinds of stories. We used to go skiing. We played softball together. We've had houses together. I lived in the Landfair house with Reuben. And I think I was getting out when Rob, the sheriff, came through the double doors and said, I'm changing everything. And, you know, and I've lived with Dan and Eric. And, you know, it's just cool that for 20 years I've gotten to just be beside these guys. I mean, I've never had no relationships for that long. I mean, some are more painful than others, and I look at my sponsor, and I cannot help but, you know, Rob's been a good topic tonight. Me and Rob have had some painful run-ins, you know, in sobriety, and I believe that one of the things has been there's a lot of, you know, whether you want to call it enduring each other, because, you know, you got to stay somewhere. Or you got to run, and I've stayed. And me and Rob always seem to magnet at each other. You know, we ride dirt bikes. You know, the field can be 700 yards in all directions, and me and Rob will tragically crash into each other. You know, or we'll be. This is a long story. We were on a bike run, and we weren't in the shower at the same. I took a shower because everybody was going on a bike run, and I snaked Rob out of the spot. And when I went out to jump on my bike, I forgot to tell everybody that Rob was still not with the pack, and we split, and that was a painful thing. And it was, and just little reference points, but I've made amends. And that's another thing is there's been times I've had to make amends to people and then stand your ground. All the guys that are sitting up here, there's one thing that I know that we have in common is that if we lose this thing or we don't carry on what we've been taught here, at least for me, I will drink and I will die. Okay, and the dog on the roof was based on God's strong sponsorship and working the steps. I left that circle once, and I ended up loaded, and you know it was bad. And I came back here, and I've gone at it, and I've stayed with these guys through thick and thin every day for 20 years, with the exception of a day on a business trip or whatever. I've literally seen these guys every day for 20 years, and I kind of take a lot of pride in being able to say there ain't a lot of people that can say that. And there ain't no secrets between none of us. We all got our faults and we got our assets. And it's cool because we've got old-timer teachings that know how to utilize all of that. And it's just good. And I'm grateful to be here. And I want to thank the committee and I want to thank my sponsor for trusting us to do this commitment. It's cool. Thank you very much.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Paul. I've been sober since March 8th of 86, and I'm grateful for that. Good to be here. Good to be sober. Thanks to the committee and my sponsor for this opportunity. Good, man. I got some Rick call me an intellectual. I really had no – I actually failed in a lot of things. I prided myself. I had – my ambition was to be a failed writer, and I was actually doing really well at that before I got here. But – you know, I came here and I was beaten down pretty good. And like Chris said, we had hair. And my sponsor said I looked like Charlie Manson's little brother, you know, when I got here. And, you know, my golden locks or whatever, brown locks. And I wasn't up on sanitation very much. And I worked in an Italian restaurant. And I remember getting in the car with these guys when I was new. And, you know, I'd get in, I'd have like flour and Parmesan cheese in my hair and stuff. And, you know, all these guys would be like, what's that smell? And it's me, you know. And, you know, I had a stretched out T-shirt and green 501 jeans before they made them that way. You know, I cultivated them myself. But just stuff like that, you know. And I showed up here. I went through a detox and I drifted for a bit. And the first night I came to my home group, you know, it was an attraction. It looked like there was going to be a brawl because there was like a brawl going on, and it's like, okay, you know, sign me up. This is kind of cool. And but I got a sponsor that night and started running around with these guys, you know. And you know, I had a hard time with a lot of that stuff. I was really beaten down, and we were talking. You know, four of us got sober the same year, and like you heard, Rick was kind of a streetwise kid from Long Beach, and Chris ran around the country with a band doing the tour, and Eric was like real suave and cool and stuff, and you know, I was just like this dick in a gray T-shirt, you know. And but you know, hey man, you know, I didn't know how to live, you know. But all I had was a mattress and a bass guitar and a big bass amp, and I moved out with these guys, and you know, I prided myself on having the police come there quickly. You know, I could make things bounce around the room with that bass, and I eventually had to get rid of it if we were all going to keep living in the same place. But the mushroom room was my fault. We went up to Monterey for a convention, and, you know, we came back in, and it had been raining like crazy, and the roof caved in. But fortunately, it wasn't, like, right on my bed. So it's like, you know, boy, I'm tired. You know, I'm going to get some sleep. And I left it that way for, like, the next 90 days or so. And I was kind of a naturalist, too. I mean, there's some interesting things going on. But some guy came over. It's like, dude, you can't do this, you know? And I remember calling my sponsor whining about it. And he's like, hey, you know, a-hole, take care of it. And so then I got on the phone. I started calling code enforcement. Oh, this is outrageous, you know. It's the man keeping me down. And we got it fixed, you know, and just stuff like that. We were all pretty wound up. And I had a $500 car, which is exactly what it sounds like. And I learned how to be a mechanic, and because I had a bad fuel pump. And what you do is if you get gasoline and pour it in the carburetor, it'll start up. good mechanic stuff. And so what I did was I got a sparkless bottle full of gasoline and drove around in the trunk with it in the trunk for a while. And finally it failed. My plan failed, and I was pretty crank, you know, high strung, I guess. So I keyed my own car. I just remember, we had to get somewhere, and I just, and it's like, well, now it's a $400 car. But, just stuff like that. You know, it was, we had a lot of fun, you know, and I had a hard time cleaning up, and my sponsor, he got in my face one night and said, you got to, you know, take care of this. I'm like standing there, and the ladies, I got like a t-shirt that's like ripped open and stuff, and it's like, what? You know, my sponsor talks about working with a guy who stood on the other side of the, looked like he stood on the other side of the doorway all night, and that was kind of me. And, you know, guys like Rob would help me. I tried walking into a Miller's Outpost once, and I think I just stood there with my mouth open and turned around and walked out, you know. And these guys took me to the mall, you know, and showed me how to, you know, get good clothes and stuff and put gel in my hair. Maybe that's what happened. But I remember walking out of the apartment that night with the clean threads, and it was like I was wearing a spacesuit, man. I really was. It was a trip. But I learned how to clean up, you know, hold my head up. And I worked with Rick. We worked in a meat plant for a while, and we were both like a buck 30, you know. Maybe he was a little more than that. And we'd go in there into the spice room, and like we're scooping out handfuls of brown sugar and honey and stuff and just eating them. That sounds good even now. But I couldn't keep doing that, you know. And I worked for that meat place. And I used to drive in a little icebox truck, and with these little hands, we'd deliver to the Air Force place. My wife likes this story. And I was pulling away from a stoplight in, like, downtown Huntington Park, Commerce District, you know, four lanes on each side. And I look in the rearview mirror, and the hams, little boxes of hams, are in the middle of the intersection. I forgot to close the deal, the icebox thing. So I whip a U-ey, so I'm flinging more hams out the back. And so I'm scooping these up, stopping traffic, you know, and I look across the street, and these guys in a bobtail are helping themselves to my hams, you know. And so I run across the street. I'm hitting the window. Give me back my hams, you know, and I probably got, you know, some of them back. And had to call the boss, you know, Willie, Austrian dude. Willie, I lost the hams. All right, well, tally it up. Let me know how much it is. And then I lost the keys to the truck, so his son had to drive 40 miles to come get the van, and God, it was terrible. And I got back. It was like 6-7 o'clock at night, and my smile, are you sober? And it's like, yeah, we'll get over here, man. And just no matter what, it's about not picking up a drink. And these guys, we did that together, days like that, a lot of days like that. And you know, you know, we stayed put. That's the bottom line. And you know, like you heard, tomorrow it'll be 45 years of our home group. And some of us, depending on the age rating, you know, have been here. I've been here for half my life. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for half my life, and it's taught me everything I know, you know, how to hold my head up, how to get my dignity back, how to be a father, you know, be an employee, be any of those things that I didn't come here looking for. I was hopeless, and I was just totally out of answers. And the people in Alcoholics Anonymous loved me when I couldn't love myself. Hard way. I remember one time I was in the back of the car whining about something, and my sponsor looked back and he said, you know, the only reason you're still here, and I thought he was going to say, like, your intense sense of natural discipline or, you know, something like that. And he's all, because you got no other effing place to go. And well, he was right. I kind of felt good. It's like, yeah, you know what? That's true. And give you a sense of belonging, I guess. But, we stayed put, man. We grew up together. Dan made me laugh when I was new. You know, and Reuben has always, he's been a leader to me. You know, he's always, his heart is where the group is, you know. And, you know, Rob, you know, has helped me a lot, you know, like cleaning up and doing those types of things. And together, you know, we've literally grown up. And like you heard, you know, when we got here, we were all the back of the line. You know, there was 40 people ahead of us. And that's AA, I guess, you know. But Alcoholics Anonymous has given me everything I have. And I'm grateful to people like Keith, you know, who saw me come in here and has never stopped. And all I'm trying to do is keep up. And grateful for my wife who supports my sobriety. We got a 9-year-old son at home who's active in the Alateen, preteen, and I have a good life. And if there's anyone newer or, you know, thinking you can do it, you can make it. And I'm glad I'm here, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to share. Thanks.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Rob. I've been sober since November 7th, 1984, and for that I'm truly grateful. And I too want to thank the committee and our sponsor, Keith, for asking us to do this. It's a privilege. It really is. It's a privilege to be sitting up here at the table with my peers. And I haven't always been able to say that, and that feels pretty good today. Let me give you a little picture. I'm the old guy amongst us here. Rick is the younger guy. I'm the old guy. I sobered up when I was 25 years old, which really isn't that old. I felt a lot older, but compared to a lot of these guys here, that was I was older than them. And in 1987, we were getting ready to go back to Boston for a young people's convention. And they were riding skateboards, and they all got an idea to get flat-top haircuts. And I just absolutely refused. Was not going to do it. Of course, the more I refused, the more they rode me about it. And, you know, it really became a problem, you know, with me. I mean, they were having a great time, but it was a real problem with me, you know. And they embarrassed me. Oh, my God. I mean, but we went to Boston. I didn't get the flat top. We went to Boston. And you know what? Through the disease of alcoholism, I had lost the ability to enjoy life and do a lot of things that I just couldn't do. And I had a hard time being light. And we went to Boston, and it was the first time in my sobriety that I said, you know what, I'm across to the United States. None of these people know me. They're never going to see me again. You know what, I'm gonna have fun. I'm going to be 18, 19 years old again. And I did, and I tell you what, it was the beginning of me enjoying and having fun in sobriety. And these guys have helped me tremendously in that area. I really believe that they've lightened me up tremendously. I still have not gotten a flat top haircut, nor do I plan to, but I learned a valuable lesson. And yes, the houses, I've lived in the houses, and when I was first new sober, within my first year, I was in Cinnamon Tree Apartments that they talked about. And then ultimately, I ended up getting married and moved out, obviously. And when I got divorced, I was at a point where I had money in the bank. Keith was not my sponsor at the time. He was my grand sponsor. And it always amazes me how the old-timers seem to know about what's going on in your head before you've even told anybody. And I understand a little bit more about that today after being around a little bit. But he said, I know you got money. I know you want to move into an apartment by yourself. But I would suggest you don't do that. Landfair needs to be cleaned up. They need help. I want you to go over there and clean that place up. Now, I was not the guy with the most time in that house. And usually the house mom or the person that, you know, was with the most time. And I knew it was going to be a challenge. I'd been over there, and I've seen it. And it was unacceptable. And he said, no, I back you. I back you, and I'll back you. If these guys give me any problem, you call me up and let me know. So then, man, I got excited. You know, I got back it, man. You know, my character defect now became an asset, you know. And it was not easy, don't get me wrong. But I tell you what, it's exactly what I needed because I was not in a good place. You know, I'd gone through a divorce, not this first time, the second time in sobriety. And I wasn't in a good place, and it gave me a purpose. It gave me a place to go where I was around other alcoholics. I wasn't by myself. Kept me busy, and yeah, we went through a lot of growing pains in there. And I tell you, one thing they didn't share about was that although they may thank me now, years later they told me about the evening that they had a shotgun at my head while I was sleeping, debating on whether or not they were going to kill me or not. And boy, I'm glad I was asleep because that really would have scared the shit out of me if I had known what was going on at the time. And it was about a year that I was in that. And I, after that, I said, you know what, Keith, I think it's time for me to move out, you know. I think I've overstayed my welcome here, you know. And ultimately, I did. But I got to share a couple quick stories about you know, I lived at the time Rick was there. And I lived with Eric for a period of time there. And Reuben was there. And there was a saying that we used to use, and still today, I believe, is that if you can live with a group of guys successfully, stay sober, not kill each other, then you're preparing yourself to be able to move in and have a relationship with a woman. And I didn't know what they were talking about at the time. Of course, I had failed twice before, so I knew I needed to do something different. But Rick and I were in the stage we were working out. Okay, whenever my pattern was when I got a divorce, of course, I got to get in shape and, you know, get me another one. And Rick was working out, and so he was all buff, and we were working out. And hot night, we had no air conditioning, windows open, sleeping in our skivvies, you know. And the dog next door is all night long. I mean, it was driving us crazy. Pretty soon, Rick pops up out of bed. He goes outside, skivvies on only. Goes over to the neighbor's yard. All of a sudden, big yip from the dog. And he comes back in. I go, "What did you do?" He said, "I killed that dog. We ain't going to hear that dog no more." And I really thought he killed it because I didn't hear that dog for several weeks after that. Later on, I found out that he didn't kill it, but it was pretty quiet for a long time. You know. And Reuben, I tried to have a good attitude. I mean, I had gone through a divorce and trying to have a positive attitude, and you learn about people, and Reuben is not a morning person. And so I'm up in the morning, and, "Good morning, Reuben. How you doing this morning?" And he's like, "Rrr, rrr, 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 rrr." You know? And it's like, damn, man. I'm trying to, you know, I took it personal, you know, like he didn't like me. And then I found out after a while that, you know, Reuben's not a morning person. You don't ask Reuben how he's doing in the morning. You know, wait a little bit. You know? And Eric was my roommate. And Eric has always had a problem with waking up in the morning. And I think he had at least 3 alarms placed around the room at different points, which still today it didn't make sense to me, and it never worked. But we had a ceiling fan. And Eric's obviously taller than I am. And the fan kind of had a little low. And his first alarm would go off, and I'd wake up. Then the second alarm would go off, and then I'd wake up. And then the third alarm would go off. And finally I'd say, "Eric, get up!" And he'd pop out of bed. And I swear his head came about this far from the fan. And every morning I was just looking forward to the morning that he was going to jump up just a little bit higher and that fan was going to hit him in the head, you know. Good times. A lot of good times, you know. And the thing about it, too, is so many times in sobriety we go through things, we're learning things, and we wonder why. Why am I going through all this? Why am I going through this? Well, today I know why. I'm married. My wife's here today. And I have 2 children, 5 and 11. And I like to think that I've grown a little bit because I no longer put the toaster in the cupboard. I can't remember the last time I cleaned the crumbs out. And I certainly don't follow my kids around picking up after them 24/7 because I'd be one tired person, you know. So I've lightened up a little bit, you know, and I'm you know, extremely grateful for that. You know, one of the things that was talked about here tonight is that how none of us were friends. That's true. You know, we didn't hang out together. The old saying goes, love the ones you're with. You know, love the ones you're with. When I first got sober, I was number 1 on the list. We have a phone list. And it used to seem as though you were almost anxious to come up on the list. That meant you were staying sober. That's a good thing. But now I'm 10th. Now I'm 11th. Now I'm 15th. Well, as you get closer to the top of the list, you realize that a lot of people have gotten drunk as a result of that. And I hate this disease. I literally hate it. I hate what it did to me. I hate what it does to the families of. I hate what it does to the children more than anything. I hate it. So as you get closer to the top and you realize what's happening, that this disease is exactly what it talks about. It's deadly, and people are dying around us. I no longer get excited when people around me, my peers, leave Alcoholics Anonymous, choose to go out and drink or live a different way of life. Because I don't want to be at the top. I just want to be one among many. I just want to be one among my group, my home group. You know, I hope and pray to God that none of these guys, my peers, are the guys either ahead of me or you know, sober less than me, have to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I know that that's probably not going to happen because that's the way this disease works. You know, But I've every one of these guys, there's been times when I've either resented them, judged them, been pissed off at them. Thank God I never wished any of them drunk, because I wish the same that they hope, and, you know, that I never wished me drunk. But today, standing up here tonight, I could tell you that if it wasn't for these guys here at this table and my sponsor and my home group, I truly would not be sober tonight, and I believe that. You know, so be careful for what you pray. Be careful what you think about. Be careful about the people you judge, because they may very well be the person that saves your life tomorrow. You know, and I don't want to drink ever again. So I'm grateful to be here, and thanks for letting me share.
Like I said, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Dan. I've been sober since December 20th, 1983. I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad you guys let us do this. I'm glad our sponsor suggested it. I'm glad we were able to do this. This is cool. And some other stories that we've had, little thing I wrote down, I was thinking about it as we were going through, because, you know, I see these guys every day. I mean, literally, I can say that without fear of contradiction. We see each other every day, you know what I mean, because we're in meetings all the time. We're doing stuff in AA all the time. So there was a time, and this was not uncommon, because we spent a lot of time together, when we were living in some of the apartments where somebody got scabies or something, you know what I mean? And everyone got scabies, you know what I mean? So our sponsors would, because they weren't living with us, they're not stupid, you know what I mean? They have they got girlfriends and stuff, and they quarantined the house. We couldn't leave the house till we took care of the scabies. None of us had any money, so we had to walk the blue line at the free clinic to go get the stuff to get rid of the scabies, you know, all that kind of stuff. We did all that kind of stuff, you know, and like Rob said, good times. Yeah. And, we had a lot of, we did a lot of panels, stuff like this. We did a lot of these things around the holidays, Christmas time, Thanksgiving, and stuff like that. And like you heard, we were broke and didn't have any money. And that guy Al that everybody's talking about, he had a mom. She was a typical Italian mother, and I don't even know if she ever spoke English. I never talked to her, but she lived in Long Beach, and we lived in East Orange County. And we were at some panel up in Hollywood or something, you know, it's like 3 or 4 in the morning, whatever, and it's Christmas, so no one's got presents, we don't have a tree, everyone's broke, so we all come home, and it's like 2, 3 in the morning, and we're tired, and we walk in the house, and there's a turkey sitting there, and a big plate of potatoes, and we just kind of looked at each other. It was like out of a movie, you know what I mean? It was like, is this real? Is this real, you know? And we didn't even say nothing. We just took that thing and tore it apart. It was like a cartoon. We tore it apart. There was nothing but bones left in about 10 minutes, you know? And then we were having a good time, you know what I mean? Those kind of things. And so we had the enabler mothers that would come around and stuff like that. Yeah, she broke into the house. That's how she got into the house. And the guys I live with, I moved in with Ruben and Eric, a couple other guys that aren't here anymore. And basically because none of our parents wanted us, you know what I mean? That's really the truth. Our parents were sick of us. I was a year and a half sober when I got to this group because no one else wanted me, even in AA, you know. And I was living with my grandma for a while, and it's pretty bad when your grandma kicks you out, you know what I mean? And I moved in with these guys, and we basically learned how to keep the lights on, learn how to, you know, pay the bills, learn how to get up in the morning, go to work, those kind of things. Those are things we didn't know nothing about. You know, I was living with my grandma, and I think I was trying to go to school or something. I was working at UPS. Like 2 in the morning to 4 in the morning or something, and she let me have her gas card, her car. I could come and go as I wanted. All she wanted me to do was mow the lawn, and I couldn't even do that, you know. Pretty sad. But I moved in with these guys, and I didn't like any of them. I didn't want to be an alcoholic, for one thing. I thought, this is a bum rap. I'm 17 years old. I'm an alcoholic. And I knew I was, but I just didn't like the idea of it, you know what I mean? I knew I didn't want to drink anymore, and these guys seemed to have an answer, and I just went with them. We basically, like you heard, we learned how to grow up together. We did a lot of conventions, staying up all night, like the guys were talking about. There would be times where no one had any money, and we drove all night to Monterey, and we could only afford one room. And there's 30 guys in one room, and we're trying to all be quiet, you know. And we're sneaking in there, and it's, you know, it's Monterey, so it's already foggy and stuff outside. And we're coming in the back way. One guy goes and gets the key, and we're coming in the back way. And there's 30 sets of footprints going to one room, you know. It's like a total blow it, you know what I mean? And those kind of things. But literally, we've seen each other in that whole period of time, you know. Our sponsor has been there, and, you know, Keith is all of our sponsors, I believe, pretty much. But it wasn't always that way. There's been other guys that were sober longer than we were that were our sponsors, different guys here. And like you heard, you know, when I got sober, I was number 40, 44 on the list, you know. And now I'm number 2. I'm the second sober longest in our group, you know. I've been in AA over half my life. Things today, I mean, most of the guys here are married, got kids, those kind of things, and our life has gotten improved because we stayed here in one spot. We've gone through all the stuff that you go through with any kind of family, all the defects, all the things, you know. We could almost sit up here and name off the seven deadly sins, really. You almost could. And we all got something, man. And everyone gets their turn in the barrel, you know. And we've had to sit there with my pants down and say, yeah, here I am. That's all I got, you know, those kind of things. And really, that's how it's been. And we grew up, you know, we've learned how to love each other no matter what. You know, no matter what. And that's what I love about AA, you know, and you hear it all the time, whatever, but this is the only place where you can come to and you're a loser. Everyone hates you, but we love you more because of that, you know, and really that's what we got here. And we're all just a bunch of, you know, lying, cheating, selfish, no good bastards, really, is what we are, you know. And but because we come here and we do the things that we've been taught by our sponsors, all the old timers that, you know, put up with all our stuff, you know. Put up with all our stuff and taught us how to live, you know. We pass that on, try to do that with the guys that we sponsor, and our lives have gotten nothing but better, you know. And that's the message we got here. You can stay sober if you want to. You know, this works for us. You know, I don't know. People do it differently, whatever. That's fine. But for us, this is what's worked, and it's good because we got something here, you know. And we've been together for 20-plus years, all these guys, and it's a good deal. I remember Chris when Chris was sober longer than me, and he drank again. You know, I remember seeing him in a blackout. In a meeting, you know, and when he came back 3 years later, I was genuinely glad to see the guy, you know, even though he stole my girlfriend before he got drunk and all that kind of stuff, but that was a different story. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. We don't hold no grudges or nothing, you know what I mean? We just work the steps and lights in the eyes of the people, all that kind of stuff. But, like I said, thanks for letting us do this, and I really appreciate it. And we're just going to end it after a moment of silence. I'd like to have Keith lead us in the Lord's Prayer.